from KQED.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians, on the web at chcf.org, and URS, a global engineering and construction firm working to improve California's public infrastructure, preserve the state's natural resources, and strengthen the environment. URS.com.
This is the California Report. I'm Scott Schaefer. Coming up, Silicon Valley South. As high-tech giants like Google expand operations into Los Angeles, why bohemian enclaves like Venice Beach are worried. And holiday entertainment tips from retro geek Charles Phoenix.
What you do is you get three Velveeta balls, small, medium, and large. First, you frost them with cream cheese, and then you decorate it up with like little vegetable face and little pretzel arms and all that. And then you put them in an electric skillet.
Also, our music critics are here with their favorite under-the-radar music from 2012, plus Al Young's final poem of the month, December.
The poet at three, crunching on a candy cane, sucking on an orange, sandy claws knocking back a cold Coca-Cola.
It's the California Report. When it comes to bang for the buck, high-tech is a great way to jumpstart your local economy. That, according to research out this week from a UC Berkeley economist, that could be good news for Los Angeles, where Google is recruiting, with the phrase, "Who needs Silicon Valley when you can have Silicon Beach?" The company opened an office in Venice Beach last year, and a wave of tech and media companies are following suit. But as the tech boom grows, some longtime residents are wondering if Silicon Beach will wipe out the rough edges they say make Venice unique. Valerie Hamilton reports.
On a Thursday afternoon, the Venice boardwalk is buzzing. Guys in green scrubs hawk medical marijuana to tourists. Homeless drummers keep the beat next to a rack of wooden bird mobiles spinning in the breeze. There's a pit bull towing a skateboarder and a guy standing on his head in the sand. The boardwalk is a bit of a circus, but residents say that's always been part of the spirit of the place.
Venice was open for everyone to be what you wanted to be.
Jamie Verosco has lived in Venice for 7 years. She's a writer and a musician.
If you wanted to live on the beach, that's fine. If you wanted to make art anywhere, you could. If you wanted to stand on a corner and play your music, you know, you did that. It's just all about being able to express yourself in any way you wanted to at any time.
Since the 1960s, that free spirit has drawn waves of newcomers and gentrification to this historically poor, diverse neighborhood. But the latest wave has taken residents by surprise.
I thought, wow, Google, that's going to really change things fast. And I would talk to people in the community, and they'd go, oh, well, it's always changing here. It's always changing here. I'm like, but I think this is different.
Venice is a small community, about 40,000 people. In the last 2 years, it's grown to include not just Google and its 500 employees, but more than 40 new tech startups, media companies, consulting firms, and investors. They've come to be close to Hollywood and to hitch a ride on Venice's rising star.
A lot of tech companies pride themselves on being creative, pride themselves on thinking outside the box. And Venice just kind of has that creative vibe.
Oren Katzeff started out with Yahoo in Silicon Valley. He joined Zephyr, a Venice startup, 6 months ago.
We think about some of the attributes that makes Venice so cool, and I think that those transfer over to what we're trying to do with Zephyr.
Zephyr leases more than 20,000 square feet on Abbot Kinney Boulevard, the street that GQ magazine this year dubbed the coolest block in America.
This is Zephyr. You walk up the stairs into this magical startup experience.
Inside, 150 people sit in front of Apple monitors packaging movie content for the web. They just hit 1 billion monthly views on YouTube.
There's a pretty good chunk of people who live very close to the office, so they get to kind of experience the live in Venice or live in West LA, work in Venice feel. It's pretty cool.
As tech companies move in, they bring money and buzz with them. That increases demand, and demand increases prices. Earlier this year, the average home price here hit $1 million, up more than 10% from the year before. Local real estate agents say the tech boom is driving the market. The market is making Venice whiter and more affluent, faster than ever before. But where some see Venice disappearing, others see a rebirth.
You're seeing Lincoln Boulevard, which for many years was really just sort of like a mini freeway with a lot of tattoo parlors and kind of, you know, broken down places. Now there's coffee shops that are popping up. There's nice restaurants. There's a lot of new things popping up in a way there where the community itself is sort of turning into this bustling young town.
He's usually not. It's all right, Bogue.
Through her day job as a dog walker, Jamie Verosco sees that transformation every day.
This is a fairly recent home. You have these big homes next to what used to be all these tiny beach cottages.
Oren Katzeff lives on this street.
Change doesn't have to be bad. What is it about Venice today, about the prices going up, about the new businesses, about all these new things coming into our community? What is truly bothering them, other than sort of this overarching feeling of this change might be bad?
If you want to come to Venice, why would you want to change it? You must come here because you like it.
Linda Lux heads the Venice Neighborhood Council. Venice is technically part of Los Angeles, so this is the closest thing the neighborhood has to its own government.
There's a danger of losing the soul of Venice, a lot of us feel, which is the diversity, which is the multiculturalism, which is the tolerance for people that aren't just like you.
In elections in October, Zephyr's Oren Katzeff won a seat on the neighborhood council, one sign, perhaps, that tech is here to stay. He says Venice is going to have to get used to the changes.
Change at times is inevitable. You can sort of take the position of it's going to happen, but how can I influence it in a way that's positive both for change and myself?
In some ways, artist Jamie Verosco agrees.
I think people have to adapt to what's going on, or else Google, you know, in 5-10 years even, this is going to be a very different place. And you may lose that spirit of Venice. And we'll have our murals up, you know. Oh, there's the pictures of what it used to be like. You know, and a little bit on the boardwalk for the tourists. But how much really of the substance of that community will be here? I don't know.
Last month, Silicon Beach welcomed another big-name newcomer, Microsoft. In a statement, the company said, quote, "We cannot wait to learn more about this unique community and get to know our new neighbors better." For the California Report, I'm Valerie Hamilton.
And we've got a slideshow of Valerie's trip to Venice Beach. Check it out on our website, californiareport.org. Well, throughout the year, our music critics offer up their take on notable new releases from California bands and musicians, and inevitably, they only scratch the surface. So much great music, so little time. So we've invited them in, as we do each December, to chat about the year in music. That's pop music critic Steve Hockman and jazz reviewer Andrew Gilbert. Hey, guys.
Hey, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
So this time we asked each of you, we gave you a little assignment, your picks for what we're calling under-the-radar releases, music that really caught your ears, but which most of us mere music mortals may have missed altogether. And Andy, let me just begin by asking you, give us a sense of what it is you were thinking about as you put your list together.
I was looking for artists that have created really significant bodies of work. These are people who really should be better known, should have more recognition.
And Steve, what about you?
The same, actually. I mean, the thing is, under the radar is a bigger territory now than it used to be, because people can release records in ways that have nothing to do with major labels and nothing to do with the pop culture radar, so to speak.
Well, let's hear from one of them right now, Steve, and your first one is a veteran singer, Julie Christensen. Tell us about her and about your choice here.
Julie has been around the Southern California music scene for quite some time now. She was a backup singer for Leonard Cohen for a while. This new album is called Weeds Like Us.
Restless. I know I should be fine just where I am.
That's Julie Christensen from her new album, Weeds Like Us. All right, Andy, let's bring you in here. Your first pick is a release from a San Francisco jazz singer, Mary Stallings.
Mary's had a really interesting career. I think I was counting, she's been rediscovered at least 4 times now. But she has just put out one beautiful album after another. This is part of her ongoing collaboration with the great Los Angeles jazz pianist Eric Reed.
And this is an album called Don't Look Back, and this song is When Lights Are Low?
Yes.
sweet music, soft and mellow, soothing and slow, strands of a mellow cello when the lights are low.
Steve Hockman, your next Under the Radar pick is from a musician who has a great family pedigree, Josh Haydn.
He's the son of jazz bass great Charlie Haydn. And Josh has led a band called Spain, which just released its first album in around a decade. But I'm going to get a little further under the radar with a project he did this year called Dead Sea Scrolls. It is just him playing solo bass and vocals. It's religious music. It's gospel music. This song, Come On and Carry Me, is just, you know, it just sort of grabs you.
Come on and carry me. Come on and carry me. Come on and carry me. Come on and carry me.
All right, Andy, let's go back to you now. And this is a quintet session. From
yes.
New Monsters, tell us.
Yeah, this is sort of a project that has turned into a band. And the bassist, Steve Horowitz, does a lot of studio work, really interesting guy, realized that his old friend, Daniel Plonzi, a saxophonist, was just composing a lot of fantastic music. So he said, Dan, let me take some of this music and arrange it for sort of a classic jazz quintet, though this is it's sort of bent in every way.
And again, that's New Monsters, Imperfect Life. You know, I'm just curious for each of you guys, and Steve, let me start with you. To what extent are you familiar with each other's music that's on these lists? I mean, are these under the radar to each of you as well?
I was familiar with one of Andy's picks, but the other two were completely under the radar for me.
Andy, what about you?
I sort of count on Steve to introduce me to new music.
And vice versa, absolutely.
Well, all right, well, there's one more that he's going to introduce us to, Steve, and this is an L.A. band called Very Be Careful.
Very Be Careful. I saw them open a show a few months ago. These guys come on stage and they're wearing these rubber horse head masks, animal masks, things like that. And they sit down and they start playing what is actually very fairly straightforward traditional Colombian music called vallenato, which is a relative of the cumbia. And it's straightforward traditional music, but they've got this energy and edge to it even. And I don't know. I just want to go see them again and again and again.
Trago de aguardiente es para toda la gente. Toma un trago de este ron es para el mamalón. Una copa de este vino es para aquella que no vino. Un trago de esa tequila es para tega chiquilla.
And Steve Hockman, revuelto is a scrambled egg dish. Is that any reference to the song?
maybe that's what you need after the party. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe
right.
The next morning.
Hair of the dog. And all right, well, Andy, let me wrap up with you. Your final pick, under the radar pick, is from a composer, a trumpeter named Wodada Leo Smith. And on paper, this kind of reads like a civil rights history lesson.
He was born in Mississippi, 1941. He grew up through the civil rights era. And these are pieces that he's been composing over more than 25 years. It's really an opus, and this is music that's righteous in the best way. There's nothing polemical about it.
And this one is called the Rosa Parks and the Montgomery Bus Boycott, 381 Days.
Yes.
Steve Hockman, is that a trumpeter that you're familiar with, Wodada Leo Smith?
Yeah. He's just one of those most remarkable figures in contemporary music. And I've been a fan of his before, but this is, you know, I'm so glad that Andy picked this as his one of his here, because I would have picked it if he hadn't. It's, and for me, it's, with all the ones we're talking about, this one sort of captures that sense of an ambitious, accomplished artist who just keeps reaching. The further he goes into his life and into his career, the more he wants to take in and put into his art. And I think that's what we're sort of seeing from all of our picks here a little bit.
That's Steve Hockman, our pop music critic, jazz reviewer, Andrew Gilbert. Great talking to both you guys. Happy holidays.
Thank you.
And to all of you.
And if you want to see their under-the-radar picks and their top 10 music releases for 2012, go to our website, californiareport.org. A couple weeks ago, we aired a story about a team of Stanford University researchers who set out to define the California accent. Now, I know some of you may be thinking, what California accent? I don't have an accent. Well, we teamed up with our colleagues at KPCC in Los Angeles and asked our listeners to describe how we talk here in the Golden State. And more than 70 of you called up to share your thoughts.
In our California way, we always tell stories by saying, and he was like, and so I was like, oh no, what? And he was like, oh, you did not say that.
And there's a difference between NorCal and SoCal in that slang. For example, everyone in the Bay Area says the word hella if you're below the age of 40.
I speak a little bit of Mandarin with a California accent. It's my way of explaining the accent. So here we go. Mandarin with a California accent. Like gongxi fat chai.
We neither over nor underemphasize any of our vowels. We don't roll our R's or hang on to them like some countries. We don't, like the Australians. The Australians have the vowels, they hang on to them, they kind of cut the words a bit short. We don't do that down here in California.
Dude, or yeah, bro.
Californians don't have an accent. Their diction is free of accents, unless, of course, they've picked up something else.
That was Ted Seaburn, and before him, Sierra Jenkins, Andrew Doolittle, Bob Howes, Bart Humphreys, and Elizabeth Souza, describing the California accent. You can find more responses on our website, californiareport.org. About a year ago, California's former poet laureate Al Young came to us with an idea that he write an original poem each month of 2012 and read it on the California Report. Well, we took him up on that, as you may have noticed, and over the past few months, he's delivered memorable verses, weaving in unique California names and places with state history, references to the seasons, and his own personal reflections. And writer Al Young joins us now for his final poem of 2012. Al, can you believe the year is over?
No, I never can believe it.
Well, I went back and looked at all your poems, and one of the things that just struck me so, I'd loved you... your pronunciation of the places in California. You know, it's just so poetic by itself. And I went back and you referenced Lodi, Modoc, Shasta, Mono Lake, the Tehachapi Mountains, Palm Springs, Santa Barbara, Napa, Sonoma, Pacifica, and on and on and on. How do you think about geography when you're writing poems like these?
I'll tell a little secret. I sit with a great big atlas in front of me and I look at the state of California, the country of California, and I try to connect myself or reconnect myself to places that I've visited or places that I would like to visit. And I make some stuff up. Of course, writers are always doing that.
Poetic license.
Yes. For example, in the poem that we'll hear today, which is set in San Isidro, perhaps there is no such a body shop called El Aguila, but...
there could be.
Yes, there could be.
There could be. Well, before we hear December, anything you want to tell us about it?
December is always a troubled month. I don't know if it's just the end of the year and everything is gathering or everything has been gathered, but there's a certain anxiety that floats throughout the culture. And there used to be an Al Young who tried his best to stay away from that. But now I relax with it and... It doesn't affect me as much as it used to.
Well, good. It's December is about endings, but also beginnings.
Yes, that's true.
Well, let's hear it, if we may.
What December remembers. 1. St. Anthony's Dining Hall, Glide Memorial Church, San Francisco. How good it feels always to feed and feed, not really the poor, but actual people, table by table, more than just one mouth at a time, next generation descendants and ancestors, one by one, one on one, one to one. What fun to deify and defy, to feed yourself to last. 2. Body Shop El Aguila, San Isidro, with its big sign in English, "May we have the next dents?" Yes, like in Stormy Monday Blues, the eagle flew on Friday, and Saturday he went out to play, except this year's Christmas fell on a Tuesday. He needed him a hard work weekend long enough to knock out a foundry full of fender benders, to make ends meet, to lavish, to water his wayward, can't-speak-Spanish daughters with digital gifts, to rescue their brother, to win back their mother. He needed back-busting blessings to lose those blues. La vida loca? Yes, life was still whatever it was. His sweet and cruel Christmases, the craziest. 3. The Poet at 3. The Poet at 3, crunching on a candy cane, sucking on an orange, sandy claws knocking back a cold Coca-Cola, all sly, all wise, all smiley and winky, all white Christmas dreamy, messing with the kid. A snowy red picture that sticks. All the way from Mississippi's Gulf Coast, the poet will clear Cal's glossy golf courses, Pebble Beach, Hidden Valley, Pelican Hill, Old Brockway, Coyote Moon, Incline Village, to land and hang with joy. To and from worlds he'll get to know, the poet will take heart and give.
That's Al Young with his poem for December. And Al, it has been a pleasure anticipating and hearing each of your poems this year.
That's mutual.
Well, I want to wish you a very happy and healthy 2013, filled with lots of poetry.
Well, thank you. I'd like to thank everyone who's made it possible for this to happen.
Well, we hope to hear more of you in 2013. Al Young served as California's Poet Laureate from 2005 to 2008, and he teaches imaginative writing and creativity at California College of the Arts in San Francisco. By the way, you can hear all of Al's monthly poems for the California Report at californiareport.org. Al, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, 'tis the season for holiday parties, and everyone's got their own celebration style, from old-school traditional to kooky and quirky. If you're looking for unusual food or vintage family fun this season, Charles Phoenix is your man. The LA-based historian and humorist is author of the new book, Americana the Beautiful. And as Colin Berry reports, he is the go-to guy for all things retro.
The first thing to know about Charles Phoenix's holidays is that they're probably bigger, brighter, and more caloric than yours. Don't take it personally. It's just that few Californians are better at celebrating than he is.
Number one, I'm completely obsessed with Logan's Candy Store in my hometown of Ontario, California, where they have been making handmade candy canes to perfection since 1933. Also, I love to go down, I'm not even sure what they call it, Christmas Tree Lane in Altadena, which is the oldest holiday light show in all of the country. Also in Altadena, which is above Pasadena, there is the Bailey and Ice Cream House, and that's really incredible.
Phoenix's 30-year fascination with past eras began as a kid in his dad's used car lots and grew into a teenage interest in American theme parks and thrift shopping. He's an all-around retro geek, but classic Christmas traditions are his favorites.
I'm also very obsessed with Christmas tree lots, especially where they flock in color. Just this morning, I was driving home from Torrance, where I had a show last night, and I came upon a Christmas tree lot that had burgundy, pink, yellow, mint green, powder blue, charcoal, and black flocked Christmas trees, and white, of course. I stopped there, and I said to the guy, "Can you flock me a tree in like five different colors?" He said, "I've never been asked before, but I can do it." I said, make it look like rainbow sherbet.
If Pee-wee Herman had a love child with Martha Stewart, whose TV show Phoenix appears on occasionally, it would be this kitsch maven, who's never met a color he didn't love and whose crafty opinions are increasingly in demand. Christmas lights?
For me, Christmas lights are like Christmas trees. There's no such thing as a bad job. I don't care if you spend a fortune hiring a Christmas tree lighting designer expert to do a perfect job, or if you're a total hack. To me, it's all the same.
His favorite holiday music is by Esquivel, the mid-century Mexican bandleader.
It's just like space age, dipsy doodle doink, you know, jingle bells and all the traditional songs. It's hilarious. That's my discovery this year. But, you know, like everybody else, I tend to enjoy and sing along with the Nat King Coles, the Andy Williams, the Carpenters, and all of the other classic Christmas songs year after year. I love to just sing along with them like a fool.
Charles Phoenix's best-known claim to fame may be his lowbrow food crafting. His Astro Weenie Christmas tree is a two-foot-high hors d'oeuvre tower. His Chirpumple stacks and bakes a cherry, pumpkin, and apple pie inside a giant cake. His latest creation is Frosty the Cheeseball Man.
What you do is you get three Velveeta balls, small, medium, and large. First, you frost them with cream cheese, and then you decorate it up with, like, little, you know, vegetable face and little pretzel arms and all that. And then you put them in an electric skillet, and you gather all your party guests around and you say cheers to Frosty the Cheeseball Man, and then you plug him in. In about 25 minutes, you have cheese dip for everybody. And by that time, they're all kind of smashed anyway, so they'll eat Velveeta. I like to kind of laugh at our culture, laugh with our culture, find the humor in it. So many people take everything so seriously. It's like, people, lighten up.
As Phoenix says himself, it's not about making a flawless Chirpumple. It's just about making a Chirpumple.
I mean, my world is not about making things perfect. It's about just the heart and soul of jumping in and doing it.
If you're hungry for more imperfect seasonal inspiration, Charles Phoenix is taking his retro holiday show on the road to San Diego, Los Angeles, and Ventura in the next few days. For the California Report, I'm Colin Berry in Los Angeles.
And that's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. You can always find us online at californiareport.org or at facebook.com/thecaliforniareports. Our director is Susie Rocho. Technical producer is Seal Muller. We had additional engineering from Howard Gelman and Dan Bringer. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Our associate senior producer is Victoria Maleone. The senior producer is Ingrid Becker. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the California Endowment, health happens in neighborhoods at calendow.org. And Chevron, committed to helping California grow by supporting small businesses and investing in education. More information available at chevron.com.